A5. Number 9A.
So we were in the middle of building up the tonality of spirit, and the main issue there is to see that that what has been established in mind has to be seen as being the only thing there exists, so that there is no opposite. Spirit knows no opposite. Therefore, spirit is that which deals with dualism. Because it is the only, one can see that it has only that one value logic, that one value nature. It's a nature of spirit that is unique, that has no dualistic nature within itself. It's therefore, because it's monistic, it is absolutely pure, the purity of spirit. So you see, again, purity again has that sense that that what is established in mind is so pure that it cannot be mixed with anything else, that it is the only. Because purity means that it is not mixed with foreign elements. Therefore, only the nature of spirit is the nature that can bring forth anything in a natural way, because bringing forth naturally means there is no opposition, no hindrance, no antagonism there. Spirit knows no antagonism. Spirit, because spirit is the only, it leads the warfare, so to say, because it's the only, it can deal with every sense of chemicalization. In spirit, everything is being dechemicalized, because chemicalization is a claim of dualism, of two powers against each other, warring with each other. But spirit, the purity of spirit, which knows only one nature, can never chemicalize. Because it has no opposite, there's no dualism in itself, because it's the only, it is what it is, and so that nature of spirit can unfold naturally, and that is the unfoldment of spirit, and therefore brings forth order, the order of spirit. Mind is the law. Mind is that law which says, I'm the intelligence that can cause and produce an effect in an intelligent, unerring way. But the way this law operates step by step is an ordered way, and that order is spirit, the unfoldment of spirit. We get the great sense that in that order of spirit, everything happens step by step. That's again unfoldment, or development, or evolution, and it happens step by step, and so the birth of spirit takes place in an orderly way. Also, you can see that because spirit is the only, therefore there is no unlikeness of spirit. In other words, spirit is shown to be showing forth the likeness of everything, of mind. Mind has an image, but because mind is the only, that spirit, that image has a complete likeness. Because nothing unlike, again, you would have an opposite, nothing unlike can enter in. And therefore, the birth of spirit, the development of spirit brings forth always the likeness of all that is in the idea of mind. Mind as an idea produces the idea, but because there is nothing besides this idea, that idea comes always out and is brought forth in its likeness, in absolute congruity with something else, an absolute similarity with something else. There is never something that can interfere and deflect the image in mind. And as it cannot deflect, it comes out as the reflection. So spirit is the great reflection. Can you see? Everything that has to do with spirit fundamentally has only to do with the fact that what is established in mind is the only thing we have to consider. That only makes it. If mind is that which has an image, Spirit says that image is the only image, therefore there are no other elements entering in, no illusions entering in, no beliefs entering in, and therefore that image is shown itself as the absolute likeness of that image in mind. And showing that is that likeness, that's the nature of Spirit. And so also we can see that Spirit is infinite reflection, because all the ideas, when they gather into the focus of Spirit, when they are gathered, no extraneous element, no foreign element enters in, and therefore they bring out in the focus of Spirit the exact likeness of the image in mind. That's why we have the reflection of Spirit, because Spirit says nothing will be ever reflected in your life and in the being that is not coming from the one mind. Spirit is that stands, so to say, as a guard and sees that which has been built up in mind is kept pure, that no foreign, no other, you say, extraneous element enters in. Foreign element, extraneous element enters in. It's a terrific sense of purity that comes out, because Spirit deals with that sense of dualism. Therefore deals with chemicalization, deals with crisis. What is a crisis? A crisis is nothing else than the battling of two opposite powers, two opposite intentions, two opposite minds, two opposite, whatever it is, that is a crisis. But in the one value of the onlyness of Spirit, there are not two. And so every time you feel that the crisis is coming up or you chemicalize, just go to the one Spirit, not to mind. You start with mind, you build up with mind, and then see that mind is the only mind there is, and that Spirit, the only. And therefore there is no opposite, and so the crisis begins to abate and things begin to sort themselves out. Can you hear Spirit? Sort themselves out. Separation of Spirit. There is a separation between the tares and the wheat taking place. And as things are sorting themselves out, it is as if you make room for the idea to come forth, the birth of Spirit. That's only the birth of Spirit is going on. You see that there is a natural unfoldment and development and an ordered development, because only then, when there is no opposition, you have that development, and you have the development of Spirit. Can you see how these are all intertwined? Just building up a terrific sense of the purity of Spirit. And therefore, we have as the onlyness of mind, seeing that is the only substance. Spirit is substance. Yes, but does it mean Spirit is substance? It means that all that what we have seen in mind and has been created in mind and produced in mind and brought forth in mind and manifested in mind is the only thing that happened. Therefore, the only thing to stand upon, to stand upon, that's substance. So, the substance of Spirit is mind. Can you see? Spirit is substance, but that substance is mind. Are the ideas of mind. Therefore, we begin also to realize if the substance is Spirit, and therefore it's the only reality. Spirit says, is reality spiritual or material? And as we have seen, that only spiritual is the substance, it is the only reality. This is one of the great ideas of Spirit, that it is substance and reality, that it is the somethingness of Spirit. So every time you think about substance, say, now what is substance? And somehow The letter you have read in the textbook comes into your mind and says, well, spirit is substance. All right, spirit is substance. But what does it mean, that spirit is substance? What is that spirit? Huh? Spirit only means that which you have seen as the creative production of mind is your only substance on which to build, on which to lean, on which to stand. Then these ideas of mind are substance, and that substance is the reality of the spiritual realm. Yes, so this would be spirit in ordered in a broad way. So we go to soul, and I build up a little bit the tone of soul. That I do that, I may always go back to mind and spirit, perhaps, to show how soul actually is a further aspect on mind again. Did you see how in spirit, practically always spirit was saying, I look at mind, and I give to mind a further aspect. That's why they are synonymous. They overlap completely. They are not two different realms. They are one and the same realm, namely God or being. They all stand for the one and only being. But each synonymous term just adds another aspect to that one being. So soul does the same. Soul, for instance, when we are reasoning out from mind to spirit, we see, well, in mind I see the cause and causative power of mind bringing forth the substance of spirit, evolving really the spiritual universe and the spiritual nature. And so something within me says, all right, then always stick to this line of reasoning. Always start with mind and see that mind is the only mind, spirit. But when you see that it is the only mind, stick to that. Don't give in anymore. Always go along that way. And that's what Mrs. Eddy calls in soul the way from sense to soul. Says, don't go back anymore. Don't retrace your step into the human or material. Just be a sticker and go along that way of reasoning and the way of thinking things out so that you feel, I don't go back anymore. I don't go back anymore to mortal mind, and I don't go back anymore to the substance of matter. That's finished. I have taken my absolute standpoint as the basis in mind, and I have seen that that basis is reliable in spirit, that I can stand on that spirit, that my spirit is understanding and substance. And so, soul says, don't give in anymore. Stick to that. And therefore we find in soul the definiteness of soul, which says, don't waver anymore. Can you now hear a completely different tone coming in? That tone of never wavering anymore. Soul is definite. Soul is unchangeable. So we are not going to change our basis anymore. What means that soul is unchangeable? It means that mind and spirit are our unchanging steps which we have taken. And so we stay with that. We are unchangeably relying on that. And that builds up within ourselves really the definiteness of that divine nature. I would say the true identity is being brought forth in that way, namely that everything has its absolute, clear-cut, tangible, spiritually tangible identity. So you have in mind the creative power, in spirit the development of that creative power. What develops is that you come to a definite identity, just as in nature. You have in nature a seed. That seed begins to develop and develop. It takes root, it gives a stem, It gives blades, and finally it gives the fruit. And you have the identity of that creative sense. So also within us goes on that wonderful order, namely that as we are building on the ideas of mind, these ideas begin to unfold within our mind, and finally they become definite in our mind. So, and we feel that now the identity, the definiteness, the clearness, the clear-cutness, so to say, of the idea is standing out and gathers now its definite expression. So soul has a lot to do with definiteness, with identity, has a lot to do, therefore, with naming. Naming is giving identity to something. The moment you name something as a chair and not as a table, you identify it properly, and you get a sense of the unchangeable identity of being. If we have that unchangeable identity of being, we see that unchangeableness does not know what a coming and going, does not know a gaining and a loss. In soul there is no coming and going because it has identity. So an identity doesn't come and go. It's unchangeable. Therefore there is no gain and loss in soul. Think of that stability of soul which we get if we see that things don't come and go, that we don't gain things and lose them, that they remain what they are. Can you now hear always the same tone coming in, that unchangeableness of soul, the stability of soul, the definiteness of soul, that they are not changing? You get, so to say, the balance of soul. In a balance, you don't always teeter-totter in your consciousness, up and down. You stay on the balance. You know what I mean with teeter-totter, mentally. You are always balanced. Can you see why in soul nothing can touch us? Soul is that which is untouchable. In soul we cannot be wounded, in soul we cannot be defaced, in soul we never lose our identity. There is no deformation in soul because it keeps its identity constantly intact. Can you hear it? That balance, that definiteness, unchangeability, keeping our identity constantly intact. Therefore, sorry that I don't know all the nice terms I have in German for expressing soul, you know, that it cannot be defaced, you say, I think deformed, no deformation in soul, that balance, the toughness of soul, because it sticks, it sticks, it sticks, it doesn't give in, soul never gives in, It has that quality. If we are rooted in soul, things can happen around us and it doesn't touch us. Gives you that wonderful sense of being untouched by anything. Because mind is all in all, and because that all in all is the only of spirit, in soul we see that that only of spirit is the great withinness of soul, where we see that God as identity includes all identities, and therefore everything in the all in all has God's own identity. Nothing that is within the all in all has another identity than God's identity. That every part and every little thing within the all-in-all has the same nature, the identical nature, the equal nature as God Himself. And you get the sense that everything that happens within the capacity of soul is really reproducing only always soul. Is reproducing the identity of God himself. And you get, because soul doesn't come and go, because soul cannot be touched, cannot be marred, cannot be defaced, you have a sense that in soul the ideas always reproduce themselves, the ideas that they reappear and reappear, that the form and identity never loses its identity, that it's renewed constantly, constantly, constantly. Like a fingerprint, if it is wounded, it reproduces exactly the same fingerprint, exactly the same. It keeps its identity. Why are we every second what we are? Why are we not the next second an animal? There is no reason why we shouldn't. If there would be no soul, we could be the next moment an animal and the next moment a plant. It's the identity principle that is responsible that our identity is kept intact. Soul always keeps everything intact. Soul reproduces the same identity constantly, constantly, constantly. This would free us from that sense that we can lose our identity, that by defacing our body we lose our identity, by deforming our body we could lose our identity. We never lose our identity. That by burying our body we lose identity, by burning it up in the cemetery we lose our identity. We can't, because soul says the identity remains intact. That's why we have in soul the immortality of being. Immortality means that the identity remains intact and nothing can touch it and can mar it. So because of that unchanging identity, we can also see that in the human, soul reacts as that which reverses that which is not identical. Everything that does not conform to the divine identity is therefore reversed until it shows forth the identity of soul. Because soul says, I reproduce myself, I reappear, I am what I am, and therefore in the human will act as a reformating power, as an exchanging power, exchanging the objects of sense for ideas of soul. It will react as a transforming power, transforming everything that is not in congruity with the divine, will transform it until it tests the identical nature. So soul does all that that transforming, reforming, exchanging, until always everything appears again in its pure identity. So you can be sure that if you sit back all without doing anything with your hands and with your legs, just by consciousness, keeping that wonderful sense of the unchangeability of the identity of soul in your consciousness, that has power, because it's mind. You see? Because soul is mind, it has power. And it does what? It purifies the situation, because it's spirit. How does it purify itself? By exchanging that which is not pure for that which is pure, by replacing that which is not the likeness of spirit for that which is the likeness of spirit. And so that identity of the true appears and reappears and appears and reappears, and we have the very fact of transformation, reformation, exchanging, and resurrecting us out of a false state into the true state. Can you see what is meant by the sinlessness of soul? Sinlessness means that it never loses its own true nature. That soul is sinless. Why is soul sinless? Because soul itself says, I'm the unchangeable identity. I cannot lose my identity. I cannot deviate from my identity. I cannot get away from my identity. So it cannot sin. It cannot sin here. It's not a moral thing, but it means here typically not losing one's identity. Yes. So you have a great sense of the balance of soul, the the constancy of soul, the steadfastness of soul, the perseverance of soul, the persistency of soul, the toughness of soul, the strictness of soul. Can you hear this? These are attitudes here that are being awakened within us, which are unyielding. Which are unyielding, occupy until I come, don't give in. Soul really is a very great taskmaster. It makes one tough, spiritually tough, you know. It says, I don't give in. All the other influences can come in, but soul tells me, stick with what there is. Stick with the identity of being. So we really get real stickers there. Tough stickers, perseverance stickers. And it makes one strong in soul. Yes. Naturally, one begins to see also that if soul is actually always maintaining its unchangeable identity, and therefore is never touched by anything foreign, that this wells up within oneself a sense of happiness, a sense of joy, a sense of freedom, a sense of satisfaction, a sense of rejoicing, an inner beauty, an inner consistency, an inner balance. And therefore you have all those wonderful qualities of the joy of soul, and the happiness of soul, the balance of soul, the grace of soul, perhaps the satisfaction of soul. The moment one does not have something contrary, you really begin to feel that one is resting in one's own nature. Yeah. Well, that's perhaps some of the main ideas in soul.